Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
He is the radio play-by-play voice of sports in Utah. He's the guy there. And I know he's the guy there because when I entered Rice-Eccles Stadium for the Oregon-Utah game on November 20th, I heard his voice over and over and over again, so much so that I took out my iPhone and I recorded the recording that you hear over and over and over and over and over and over again as you enter the stadium. Here's Bill Riley's voice as you walk into Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Good evening, fans. You're welcome to Rice-Eccles Stadium. First off, bats, weapons, alcohol, and outside food and drink are not allowed in the stadium. So now's your chance to return those items to your car. Each guest is allowed to bring one factory-sealed water bottle of less than 1 liter. Umbrellas are also prohibited, so ponchos are recommended. For a full list of prohibited items, please see the red signs outside each gate.
When you go into Rice-Eccles Stadium, you hear the voice of Bill Riley. He is all over the state of Utah. ESPN host there, the play-by-play voice of Utah, Real Salt Lake, all over the place. Like when I walked in there, Bill, it's no umbrellas, it's bottled water, one bottle of water, clear bags. People recognize your voice when you're in line at the supermarket.
It's so funny. I was picking out to-go food last night, and I'm taking it out from a bar, and I said, order for Riley, and the guy looked up. He goes, hey. Thought I recognized that voice. So, yeah, you get that from time to time.
All right, a lot of Duck fans looking forward to this game. It was 38-7, just 2 weekends ago. It was a boat race. 28-0 at halftime. Game was over at half. I started writing my column at halftime, Bill. But, you know, what did Utah do in that game that you feel, or maybe Utah feels, it can duplicate here in the championship game?
Well, here's the thing, John. They didn't do anything crazy and out of the ordinary. Now, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to run the ball the same way they did. Maybe Oregon sells out to stop the run. I think they tried the other day. But if that's the case, Utah really didn't have to throw it much, and they're a pretty good throwing football team. I think what they did was sustainable because they just simply ran their offense and defense. They didn't run a bunch of gadget plays. They didn't have throwbacks and fake punts and all that other stuff. Frankly, they didn't even force a turnover by the Ducks. They just played the game pretty straight up, and I feel like, yeah, they're going to tweak things. Nobody's going to run the same play. You're going to adjust. You're going to try and feel what Joe Moorhead's going to do to adjust too. But I think they feel like what they did was sustainable. They're just going to have to tweak it a bit, but they didn't do anything out of the ordinary the first time around. You're right, it was a perfect storm game. There's no doubt about that, the atmosphere and everything else. I'm more curious to see how Oregon makes up 31 points. It wasn't a game that was close, and then Utah got a couple of late scores because Oregon had to throw it and there were some turnovers. It was a complete control for Utah for four quarters, so I'm curious to see how the script gets flipped and you make up 31 points in 13 days.
Oregon, it became evident to me last weekend against Oregon State that Oregon wants this game, and I think that's good. I think it's great for the conference. What does winning a conference title, going to a Rose Bowl, mean for Kyle Whittingham, for Utah fans, and for this program that joined the Pac-12?
Well, for Kyle Whittingham, it's kind of the career capper. I mean, it's that kind of that last big notch or that last big addition on the resume. He won Mountain West Conference titles. He won a Sugar Bowl, had an undefeated season, and beat Alabama and Nick Saban in the South. He transitioned his program from a Group of Five school to a Power Five school. He's won his division four times, three outright. The only thing he doesn't have is a Pac-12 title and a trip to the Rose Bowl. So for him, it's kind of a career capper. For the fan base, it's just a chance to call yourself a champion. It's to do something that a lot of people didn't when they joined the Pac-12 conference. There were some people saying, Utah? I mean, Colorado, okay, they were in the Big 12, but Utah? I think it's kind of validation for the fan base that, yeah, we are now here. We've been good, but now we're among the best teams in this league. So I think that's kind of where that stands. And I think you're going to see a lot of Utah fans. They had a week and a half jump on Oregon fans on buying tickets, and Utah fans can drive 5.5 hours. So I think it's going to have, there's going to be a lot of red in that stadium on Friday.
A lot of talk this week, of course, about Lincoln Riley and USC. How do you view his arrival in this conference?
I think it's a great hire by USC. It's not just a win the press conference hire. It's also a terrific hire because of his resume. However, and I think you might feel a little bit the same way, I'm not ready to hand the South to Lincoln Riley, to hand the conference back to Lincoln Riley. It's a great hire. He did great things at Oklahoma. That said, he inherited a program that had a built-in culture. He jumped into the well-oiled machine. He didn't have to build anything. He just had to keep what was going with from Bob Stoops. He's got to go to USC, and that's been a broken culture, John, since Pete Carroll left. Sark couldn't rebuild it. Kiffin couldn't rebuild it. Coach O couldn't rebuild it. Clay Helton was over his skis. Now, that's not to say Riley can't, and maybe he will have success. But this notion that all of a sudden everything changes out west now, they still only get 85 scholarships. John Robinson and John McKay could give scholarships to anybody they want. There's still only 85 scholarships. Utah and Oregon have established their foothold. ASU's not bad. Washington might get it going. The conference is different than even when Carroll was there, so I think it's a terrific hire. But I'm not ready to pass the crown back to USC just yet.
Multimedia guy, radio host, TV on occasion, play-by-play voice, Bill Riley in Salt Lake City. Bill, what scares you about Oregon in this game?
What scares me is they've got dudes. They've got guys that can make plays, and they've got guys with championship pedigree. Kayvon Thibodeau, Noah Sewell, Verone McKinley, Travis Dye. These are guys that played and have played in big games and won championships for Oregon before. So these guys are not going to go quietly into the night because they got their butts kicked 2 weeks ago in Salt Lake City. They're a prideful group. And you know, let's face it, he's the head coach, Mario Cristobal's proven he can adjust and he's a winner. So, you know, I think the game will be closer than it was. I still like Utah, John, but Oregon having dudes and playmakers and game wreckers and guys that can make explosive plays and guys with championship pedigree, that stuff doesn't go away. So that's the part that makes me nervous.
We've been talking all week about kind of the fan bases, Utah fan base, Oregon fan base. Jeff Schwartz, a former Oregon player, he says, look, I understand why Utah fans don't like Oregon because we take all their great players out of Utah. Josh Newman, the columnist at the Salt Lake Tribune, says, you know, look, Utah's got a thing for Oregon. You know, maybe it goes to basketball. Maybe it goes to, like, Oregon's in their way here in this game. Is there some animosity, healthy friction? How do you see that rivalry or these fan bases?
I don't think there's hatred. I've heard a few people on social media, different places, say hatred. I don't think so. I think there's a disdain because Utah thought they were the team to beat in 2019, and the Pac-12 championship was taken from them by an Oregon team that was a little pissed off because they got removed from the playoff conversation. I think that sticks with some people. And to be very fair, I think basketball plays a role in it too. Dana Altman has owned Utah in the Pac-12 era. Some of Utah's better teams, I mean, I still have nightmares about Joseph Young's bank shot from about 35 feet at the buzzer in Las Vegas. There have been some really good Utah teams in football and basketball over the last 7, 8, 9 years who have been sidetracked by Oregon. I don't think the recruiting thing has a whole lot to do with it, but I do think that losing some of those key games does. So, yeah, I don't think that it's a hatred. I just think it's a frustration because Oregon's kind of taken their candy and their lunch money from them a few times.
Now, earlier in the week, Kyle Whittingham kind of shut down the talk about his retirement, at least temporarily. But if he gets to a Rose Bowl, wins a Rose Bowl, it's bound to happen again. What happens with Whittingham at the end of this season in your mind? And if he does leave, does it go to the D coordinator, the O coordinator? Do they go outside? I can't see that. You know this better than anybody, Bill.
I don't know. I asked him point blank. He and his wife were sitting with me at the coaches show 2 weeks ago, and they can't figure out where all this retirement conversation came from. Kyle looked me in the eye and said, I have given it absolutely zero thought. I'm just living it day by day, but I'm having more fun coaching than I have in years. They've got a good team coming back. Would it shock me? Wouldn't shock me. Would it surprise me? Yeah. I just think that he likes doing it. He's told me, though, John, he's not going to be a lifer. He's not going to coach forever like his dad and Lavelle Edwards and other people did. But right now, he's enjoying this team a lot, and he's got a really good program coming back next year. As far as successor, Morgan Scally was mentioned for an awfully long time. I still think he would be in the mix. But I think Mark Harlan would take a pretty hard look at everything. I really do, because the program's in such great shape. It's a whole lot different program than it was 17 years ago when Kyle got it from Urban Meyer. So, but I do really believe that he doesn't have any idea right now what he's going to do. I don't think he's thinking about retirement, no matter what happens Friday night or in a potential bowl game.
I've got the box score from the 38-7 debacle on Oregon's side in front of me. And you're right. Like, you know, Cam Rising threw for 178 yards, did not have a touchdown pass. Utah did not have a 100-yard rusher in this game. You look at the receiving totals. Yeah, you had a 118-yard receiver. You got a punt return. It doesn't look 38-7 when you look at the box score.
Yeah, but you and I were both there, and we saw it, and it was. And that's the thing that really stands out. That, you know, the old adage, sometimes numbers can be deceiving. Again, but if you look at that too, there were no turnovers in the game. Utah didn't force a turnover. It wasn't like they had short fields. The punt return, to me, and I think you'd admit it too, that was the one that really, if it's 21-0, maybe there's a glimmer of hope. But when Covey took that back, and I still can't figure out for the life of me why Mario Cristobal punted the ball to him, not just straight out of bounds, but that took the starch out of it completely. 28-0 is different than 21-0. And again, I would be shocked if it were 21 or 28-0 on Friday night at halftime.
All right, 2016, Warriors-Cavs play in the NBA Finals. Game 2, Warriors win 110-77. Game 3, Cavs win 120-90. It was a 63-point swing. Bill, that's going to happen in this championship game. That's what the state of Oregon is banking on.
Okay, if LeBron and Steph have something to do with it in Vegas on Friday night, maybe. I think it will be a closer game. I don't think we'll have a wild swing both ways. I think we're going to see more of a game Friday, kind of like what we thought going into the last game. I just think Utah is better and more consistent where they've needed to be this year. Oregon has shown us glimpses, and again, that's what scares me, because they do have it in them. I just haven't seen them put it together on a pretty regular basis for maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a month or so, where Utah really has. So I'm in what I saw the first time around. So I'm going to say Utah in a close one, John.
All right. I picked it close as well. I picked Oregon. I don't feel great about it because I saw 38-7, and that recency bias is not leaving my head. Meanwhile, on Saturday, we'll get another opportunity. Timbers are hosting Real Salt Lake at Providence Park, Western Conference Final. That'll be a 3:30 kickoff Saturday on FS1. You will be there as the voice of Real Salt Lake. What are you expecting in the Western Conference Final?
I don't know. To be fair, this Real Salt Lake team has been so weird, and there was zero expectation for them before the year. They don't have an owner. They haven't had really a full-time engaged owner in place. They're still searching for that, so they weren't able to go out and spend for free agents and designated players and things of that nature. But they had a good core of players. Then their coach quit on them about two-thirds of the way through the season to take an assistant job in Seattle. Freddie Juarez left a head coaching job to become an assistant in Seattle because he wasn't sure if they'd renew his contract. Pablo Mastroeni takes over. They've taken to him. And in essence, they win in the dying seconds to get into the playoffs in Kansas City. They were terrible in Seattle a week ago, but then they win in PKs. And then they outplayed Sporting Kansas City a second time. Just played them off the field in the second half and beat them 2-1. So, I don't know what to expect. I think it's a galvanized group and they're healthy. I understand the Timbers. Sebastian Blanco's a question. Asprey's a question too. So I think that they're going to go in. They're kind of playing with house money at this point in time. There's no pressure on them. And we'll see what happens.
You know, last time these teams met, it was, I think it was 3-1. Before that, it was 6-1. Portland has won all three in 2021. But who knows? You're right. And so much of MLS, like, help our listeners now who aren't like diehard soccer fans. So much of it is just you know, playing well when it counts. Because, you know, Portland here, you know, highest seeded team left in the West. Nobody thought Portland would be here.
No, it's soccer's so bizarre. I mean, I mentioned the Seattle game. Real Salt Lake didn't get, John, not a shot on goal. They didn't get a shot in 120 minutes of soccer. I've been doing this 17 years. I can't remember a professional franchise in a playoff setting not getting a shot in 120 minutes, yet they advance in penalty kicks because they go 6-for-6. Soccer is bizarre. You can play terribly, but if you get one break, one ricochet off a post or a crossbar, one guy tackles another guy and there's a penalty kick, that's all that matters. And that's kind of how Real Salt Lake's lived the last month, month and a half. So they're going to go play with house money. Portland's probably on paper the better team, although without Blanco, I'm not sure. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. I love that atmosphere. I've been up to Providence Park so many times. I love the atmosphere. I just hope I don't hear that damn chainsaw all day long.
All right. I said this on your show, but you're not going to go for a split here. Like, I couldn't trade you Oregon going to the Rose Bowl for Real Salt Lake going to the MLS Cup. But, you know, what's the wager here between radio show hosts in Salt Lake and Portland?
All right. We both, you guys pride yourself on your craft beer. There's a great emerging craft beer market here in Utah,
okay,
too. I want a six-pack of Deschutes, my favorite line of Deschutes, and I will let you peruse some of my favorite beers here, and you can pick out the six-pack you would like, and I'll either deliver it in person or have it shipped to stately Canzano Manor.
All right. And I'm not getting this Utah beer that's like 1%. Am I?
No. We'll get you a high point.
Okay. All right. Bill Riley, you're the best. I will see you in Vegas inside the stadium.
Thank you, John.
I love that. Bill Riley, ESPN in Salt Lake City. We don't want to split in our state. Like, you know, this, we're not trading, like, all right, we'll, Oregon's MLS team can go to the MLS Cup and Utah's team can go to the Rose Bowl. No. We're greedy. We want it all. State of Oregon, 2-0 this weekend, Friday, Saturday. Tomorrow's football game, we'll start it off, and I will be joining this show live from Vegas tomorrow as Judah Newby will be in the seat, but I'll be joining, you know, and I'll be at Allegiant Stadium with some insight on the game as well. But it should be a good one. And look, that recency bias, it's in our heads. I know it because I get it during the NBA Finals. Some team wins game one, and we all immediately go, oh, there's just no way the other team can win games in this series. It's over. It'll be over in four. It'll be over in five. We see it time and again. This is a series played between Utah and Oregon. And I think Utah was playing for a lot at Rice-Eccles Stadium on November 20th. It really was. It was a catharsis. I was there. I've seen games like that. It was like Washington breaking through against Oregon when Mark Helfrich was coaching the Ducks. It was like the Ducks breaking back through against Washington a couple years ago. There's just a catharsis. Oregon State did it to Oregon last year in the Civil War football game. It just lines up in a way where it's your day. And everything you do kind of clicks, and you make the other team look bad. Oregon looked terrible on November 20th. Oregon's not that bad. Utah's not that good. I think this is a close game. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. You tell me your pick for this game. And leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Disappointed that Bill Riley, the voice of Utah sports, picked Utah to win this game tomorrow. Also disappointed that the radio station that you're listening to received some complaints about my opening segment. And if you'd missed the opening segment, you're going to have to go back and listen to the podcast. But Judy and Woodburn has written in to the station, and Judy and Woodburn is very disappointed with how I opened the show today, pointing out that Friday is not my favorite day of the week. I said it earlier in the week, Judy. I don't know what day of the week goes over big in Woodburn. Maybe it's Monday. Maybe it's Tuesday. I don't know what day of the week is the favorite day of the week in Woodburn, but She took offense to me saying Thursday is my favorite day of the week. It's a really simple equation, Judy. Okay? This isn't about discrimination. This isn't about me trying to alienate any segment of the audience. But I just find Thursday, it's my day. You know? Like, for me, I have fun on every day of the week on these shows. Every day is a joy. Like, I thought Tuesday's show was lights out, especially hour number three of Tuesday's show, where we were talking about Polish language and Mandarin, and we were talking about USC's athletic director and all that. And by the way, you know, we're going to be talking to Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, later in the show. I thought about something last night as I was preparing for this show. I'm always thinking about the show. It's part of the curse and maybe part of the blessing of being a sports columnist and a radio show host. Judy, I will get back to you in a second in your complaint, but let me just, if I can digress here, part of the curse of being someone who has to create content all the time is that I'm always...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.